Yeah. If you're so concerned about being celebrated and figuring out ways to keep your job instead of doing your job, then you're probably not right for the job. Your focus can only be at one place at one time. And if it is outward looking in to see how you can make yourself special, you know, with all the current things, like get more likes or get more attention in one space or another, then I just find it hard to believe that you truly are focused on figuring out how to solve problems that are in front of you. A lot of people, they want to make sure that their name is on a billboard or that they get some form of recognition to say they did a great job. Some of the most significant things that I've done in my career, just seeing someone smile or express gratitude because of closure on a circumstance, has a far greater value than any recognition award that I've ever received.
Hello and welcome to our podcast, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, where we talk to business people, journalists, ambassadors, artists, sports heroes, leaders and luminaries from all over the world. In other words, we will be talking to interesting people about their interesting experiences. My name is Siebe van der Zee, and I'm your host. I'm originally from the Netherlands, happily residing in the Grand Canyon state of Arizona in the United States. I'm also known as the Dutchman in the desert. I hope you will enjoy this program. This podcast is sponsored by PDF, the Professional Development Forum. You can learn more about PDF at professionaldevelopmentforum.org. Our guest today is Sheriff Paul Penzone. Sheriff Penzone is responsible for Maricopa County, the Sheriff's Office, MCSO. And MCSO is the primary enforcement agency for a population of almost 5 million residents. Their jails process and house all felony and most misdemeanor inmates for the county with over 100,000 intakes annually. That's quite a number. The city of Phoenix, America's fifth largest and fastest growing metropolitan area in the United States, is the largest city in Maricopa County. Sheriff Penzone has a combined 30 years of law enforcement and public safety experience, including a distinguished 21-year career with the Phoenix Police Department and with 7 years dedicated to the well-known Silent Witness Program, focused on solving cold cases and apprehending dangerous fugitives. You can find further information about Sheriff Penzone, including his bio, on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. With 30 years of law enforcement and public safety experience in a rapidly growing community, can you imagine the lessons Sheriff Penzone has learned in his life and in his career? Welcome, Sheriff. Thank you very much for joining us.
I'm honored to be here with you. Thank you for the time.
It's truly an honor. You have a tremendous background. You're dealing with a lot of people that create trouble, problems, crimes, misdemeanors. And at the same time, you try to build the trust with the community in which you serve. So a simple question, what does it take to be a successful sheriff?
I wish I could give you a perfect formula. Maybe I'd write a book and move on to become a novelist. I don't know that I could tell you what the exact answer is. I'll tell you what's worked for me. And this really is when you talk about lessons learned. It is always, you know, can you be the person? Can you be the person that you want to work for? So when I look at my opportunity to be in leadership, to be a sheriff, for me to be successful, I think first and foremost, you have to recognize the privilege that you've been given and that we should always be guardians of that responsibility. I use that term very strongly because I think oftentimes law enforcement is perceived as warriors. We go out there and we can deal with considerable threats. We deal with bad people and good people on bad days. But if you don't recognize your responsibility to guard a community, to be thoughtful in your actions, and to make sure that you embrace the idea that you're not entitled to the privilege. You're not entitled to the power. It is privilege. And we'll talk about that in one of my lessons. I think if you find that place of being humble and recognizing that you serve others, being a servant leader, then you'll find your course to make the right decisions, or at least the best decision available.
Yeah, and I'm glad the 10 lessons will follow because there's a lot to it. I like the way you express it, but it takes a lot, I'm sure, especially also with the numbers, the number of people that you're dealing with and in a growing community. Is there a lesson perhaps that you have learned in life, in your career, that if you would be right now, if you would be 30 years old, that you would be able to teach yourself?
Yeah, it is in one of, you know, oftentimes I speak of these things that we'll get into in a little bit more detail. But I think as a younger man, younger woman, you always feel like there's so much time ahead of you to accomplish things that we're not that we should be in a hurry, but we don't always capitalize on the opportunity to make the most of it. So in this position, and the things that I've learned now, if I could turn back the clock, it would be exactly that. How do I seize, you know, carpe diem? How do you seize the opportunity, seize the moment, and make the most out of it? Not so much for your own benefit, your own value, your own gratification, but in that moment for others, what could you have done to give more, to be more, you know, to help more, so that as you reflect back once you get older, you know, as the clock ticks off, you didn't miss out on those chances. You made the most of them. And it's not about being perfect. It's not about always having the answers. It's really about having a passion for life that in each moment you try to make the most of it.
Is that something that is part of your personality, or is it something that you had to learn over time?
No, I believe I learned it over time. And I believe that being in this position, you know, in the last 5 years has taught me a lot about it, because everything that happens, if you take it for granted because you're in this space and you know that it may occur again, you know, significant opportunities like being on a podcast may happen again. I think that you can become almost apathetic or lethargic about it, because it could have a redundancy to it. But if you truly look at it for the purity and the value that it has, you know, who gets a chance to do this? Who gets a chance to speak to a consul, to someone who represents and has come from another country and has all these world experiences, and to talk about things that could hopefully drive this profession back into a place where it is more dignified, more respected, more appreciated, because men and women who are in the profession are inspired by leadership to be the best that they're capable of being in service of others. So it's definitely something that I've learned since receiving this privilege and having this platform.
And it appears that you are very comfortable with that.
You don't know until you get there. So people say, is it what you expected when you became sheriff? I don't think you prepare for this level of authority as well as exposure. But absolutely, every day that I come to work, people say, is it tough being a sheriff? I say, heck, I roll out of bed every morning and I'm the sheriff. That's such a privilege that if you don't take advantage and make the most of it for others, then you probably shouldn't be in this seat. So even in the difficult days, I realize I'm very fortunate.
Wow, I like it. And obviously it sets the stage to discuss your 10 lessons. And I'll start with lesson number one. Authority is privilege, not entitlement. And you continue by saying, value it, respect it, and never take it for granted.
Yeah, I think oftentimes we see people in leadership and they work so hard to hold on to their job, to that power, that perceived power, but they believe that they own it. They believe it's something that makes them special, as opposed to you have the chance to make the authority special on behalf of others. So I just think that if you recognize and you humble yourself to say, this is really a privilege, it's not mine to own. You know, I wasn't born with the name Sheriff Paul Penzone. I was born Paul Penzone. And the day will come when I'll return to that space without a title, and it shouldn't change me. Therefore, I shouldn't change while I'm in this space. I should recognize the very men and women that I serve are the ones, even the ones that we arrest, are the ones who have empowered us to be the guardians, the caretakers of this great authority in our nation. You know, we take freedoms from people every day. And if we don't respect the process to make that decision, and we're not just in our actions, then we shouldn't have this authority. So therefore, I always try to embrace the ideal that it is a privilege, not an entitlement, and respect it every day. Otherwise, you're not entitled to keep it. So you're not privileged to keep it.
And at the same time, as the sheriff, you represent authority. Right?
Absolutely.
Perceive it that way. Whether you say, hey, I do want to hear the other side, you are the sheriff.
Yeah, no, you have to have the courage to make difficult decisions. And you have to have the discernment to recognize that it should never be personal, emotional, political, or, you know, a partisan in any way or subjective in any way. It has to be as pure as you're capable of making it. But in America, yes, if you look at it and you say that you have the position of being an elected official and having law enforcement authority, that's an extremely powerful pair of circumstances, and you better be deserving of it, and you better recognize what others expect of you in protecting these powers.
Yeah, thank you for that. Lesson number two, listen more, talk less. Boy, that's a good one for me. People deserve to be heard. In a similar vein, right? People deserve to be heard, but again, you are the sheriff.
Yeah. And I'll preface it by telling you this. One of the most important things that I do every day is that when I speak, I am representing in our organization 3,500 men and women who come to work every day, going into the jails, going out into the streets, doing, you know, jobs that are truly difficult and dangerous to promote public safety. My role is to make sure that when I speak on behalf of their sacrifice. It's not about myself, about the work that they do. Yeah. So I'm very measured with my words. When I say that, I don't mean that I'm not diplomatic, I'm not scripted, but I am measured because I want to make sure that I'm respectful to them. And although there's a little bit of a contradiction because I'm speaking so much today, many years ago, when I was first promoted to sergeant, first level supervisor, I was having an interaction with someone in my office. And for some reason, I had this epiphany moment in the middle of it that I was not listening, that I was speaking too much, and I wasn't hearing what they were talking about or what was a concern for them. And whether I agreed, disagreed, whether I was going to be able to accommodate them or not, it did not matter. What matters is that they were able to be heard. So I actually got a 3x5 card and I wrote it on there. Listen more, talk less. And I propped the card up on my desk where it faced me and only I could see it. And the person adjacent to me could not see it. But every time I sat down to have a meeting with someone, I made sure I peeked at that card first. And it reminded me of zip my lips and let them do the speaking so they can have their chance to be heard about something that they're passionate about, or emotional about, they're caring about, so that they know that they're valued.
It's a great point. And truly, I tend to speak too much, but I've learned as part of the podcast that it's up to you as the guest, and I better stay quiet.
Next time I'll be on that side of it, you'll be on this side of it, you can do all the talk and I'll learn more about you.
I like it. We can set that up for real. I like it. Yes. Thank you. Lesson number 3, respect is a gift you give because it reflects your own values and beliefs, regardless of who you are interacting with and what they may have done. I think you kind of reflected on that already, right?
Yeah, and I'll take it to its most pure form. If I were to visit the jails, as I do frequently, and see someone in there, and I tell my employees this because I think it is a very important lesson. We live in this world now where I think young adults, and I hear it too frequently oftentimes from professional athletes, you know, I want my respect, I want my money, that's how you show me respect, or I want this, and that's how I receive respect. Respect is not something you get. It's something that you give. It's defining of who you are, what you believe in, what your own value system is. And everywhere you go, you should exude that commitment to self-respect and respect to others. And if we allow the behavior of another person, as I said in the jail, I go in the jail and I meet with somebody who's done something atrocious and they're being provocative and they're saying, you know, things to me that are just disrespectful. If I stoop to that level and I respond in that way, I have become like them. I'm a reflection of their behavior, their attitudes. But if I do my best to rise above it, to show patience and kindness, to still be thoughtful in the manner in which I interact with them, two things occur. One, I'm restoring my own value system. I'm protecting it because if I give it away, I'm not going to get it back the same. It won't be pristine. So if I stoop to that level and become unethical or disrespectful, it reflects me. It reflects poorly on me. But first and foremost, I'm protecting the values that I believe in. But secondarily, I may inspire that person to find a way to be more thoughtful, to be more patient, to be more kind in their words, because they don't feel that sense of threat or disrespect. So when we deal with bad people and bad circumstances, we have to ask ourselves, are we going to behave badly also, or are we going to rise above it and represent, you know, the badge that we wear and the patch that we wear, and all those who came before may be sacrificed by giving the ultimate sacrifice and losing their lives. We owe it to them to be our best self.
But you're dealing with people that have very poor behavior, probably or perhaps under the influence of drugs and alcohol, individuals that are violent, let's face it. Does that still relate? That lesson still applies in those circumstances? Because you have to obviously control those individuals. That's part of the job.
Well, I mean, I would tell you, as humans, we have our moments where I can speak these words, but to practice them in every circumstance can be difficult. You know, yep. When you see an atrocity, you see a child harm. You know, I've lost deputies in the line of duty, and it's touched me professionally. I'm not saying we should be robotic, that we're not real. Yet, I will tell you this. Okay, as you've stated many times, I'm the sheriff. I carry great responsibility with the authority that I'm given. I don't have to tell you that. I don't have to bang my chest and say, you don't know the powers that I have. Here's what I could do. People know that. They understand that an individual has been given this authority. Therefore, it's theirs to yield appropriately. So if necessary, if the law means that I have the responsibility to carry somebody on a particular way, we do so. But to treat it as though it's our sword to swing, just to let you know how powerful it is, then I find that's the pathway to becoming more abusive with your authority, and that's never a healthy thing.
Yeah, well said. Lesson number 4, leave people with the feeling they are respected even when you disagree. That kind of connects to what you just said. Every interaction may seem redundant and even insignificant, but it is significant to the other person because you represent something greater than self.
May I share a personal story?
Please.
So, and I love sharing the story. It's, you know, many people have heard it from me many times. I had just been elected. I had been the sheriff for more than maybe a week or two, and I was attending a really large event for the first time. So I'm suddenly in this space that's unfamiliar to me. I'm the sheriff, but I don't realize that you walk into this, you know, you're in a fishbowl. Everyone's eyes will be on you, especially when you've unseated, you know, a legacy predecessor like the person who I defeated. And in my blur, in this large room with a lot of people, I happened to turn around. I bump into this young man. He was all maybe 17, 18 years old. And when I bumped into him, almost knocked him over. So I kind of catch him and dust him off. I said, "Hey, my apologies. Are you okay?" Said, "Yeah." I said, "Please forgive me. I wasn't paying attention. I hope you're okay." And I walked away thinking nothing of it. I mean, it's just basically I was raised to try to be polite and respectful to people. And a few days later, apparently he had sat down in his chair. I'm trying to imitate it. He took a selfie with his phone with me in the background, standing up. He was completely unaware when he was doing this. And then he posted and he hashtagged it to the sheriff's office. You know, isn't it cool that the new sheriff who had bumped into me was kind enough to apologize? And the reason I share that story is I think it reflects exactly what I'm trying to emphasize, which is, to me, that moment, it's not that it's insignificant, although I could argue that it is, because I interact with so many people during the course of the day, it is one of many experiences. But for that young man, it was one experience with one sheriff in one moment that stuck with him. Now, had I been disrespectful, mm-hmm. he would have thought less not only of me, but of the sheriff's office. But by just taking the time to gesture in a kind way, what was insignificant to some extent to me had a lasting impression on him, and then will affect his friends, his family, those that he speaks with when he starts to talk about the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. So I think that if you can always leave people with the sense that they have value, that you are respectful to them, and that moment is their moment, much like Maya Angelou, where she, you know, it's not what you said or what you did, but it's how you make people feel that that will stay with them.
Yeah, it's powerful. And I must say, it doesn't necessarily, in that sense, connect to perhaps the perception of law enforcement. And not that I have any doubts about it, but that's not what perhaps the general public would expect. They would expect a rougher attitude. And I am the sheriff. I'm going to tell you what to do, which I'm sure you have a way of communicating as well. But that respect, and actually, if you don't mind, if I look at lesson number 5, humility must be a requirement, not an exception. It must be a requirement. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think the greatest strength comes from humility. You know, I talked about the authority that I'm given. Arrogance doesn't make it more powerful. It doesn't make it more impactful. As you can see, like right here and over here, I'm obviously a man of faith. Yeah. And I don't say as though one faith is better than another. It's just I'm passionate about my faith and I believe very strongly. And I think that when you recognize how, in the greater space, in the world itself, we're a singular individual in a world of, you know, millions and millions of people. If you don't recognize how insignificant as a person you are, really, when it comes to the greater impact of the world, you can impact small spaces and people. But when we start thinking that we're more than we are, bigger than we are, then I think we do a disservice to just the simplicity of people of faith that want to serve others, to be servant leaders. So by just reminding myself every morning that, hey, by the grace of God, I am here, you know, health-wise, opportunity-wise, circumstance-wise, and I've been given this opportunity to make the most of it. And the best way that I can do that is to show people that kindness is not weakness. Don't confuse the two. There are times as a sheriff where I have to exude my strength and confidence and be very matter-of-fact and succinct about an issue to ensure that people understand we are going to hold the line when it comes to public safety. But if that's all I do every day and beat my chest, the message becomes diluted and people don't see the human side of this profession.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. We're talking today with Sheriff Paul Penzone, who is responsible for the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office in the state of Arizona with almost 5 million residents, sharing his 10 lessons that he learned in, 50 years. That's our title.
That's a tough part for me.
Thank you. Lesson number 6. It seems to be in the same vein. Lesson number 6, servant leadership is the most rewarding form of leadership. And by the way, I noticed in your background, you're also involved or was involved, but maybe still with a nonprofit organization, Child Help, dedicated to the treatment and prevention of child abuse. It was just an item on your bio, but that relates to perhaps servant leadership as well.
Sure. And actually, when I retired from Phoenix Police Department before I became sheriff, I went to work for that organization. I wanted to get back in a different capacity, never expecting I'd circle back to law enforcement. It was really circumstantial. But after having a very fortunate and blessed career in law enforcement, I retired. I went to work in the nonprofit sector with Child Help, caring for children of abuse and neglect and working on prevention programs. And it's very rewarding. So when I talk about servant leadership, again, I'm a sheriff. It's a position I never expected. It wasn't on my bucket list. And to be here is absolute fortune. But when you reach an opportunity such as this, although you may be forward focused on different circumstances, I think you always have to look back and ask yourself, how do I carve this path, create opportunity for the next person? How do I work with others so that they may thrive, they may succeed? Because I just think that the more you do for others, the more you can't take the money with you, can't take the homes, you can't take all this, but as you get later in life and you look back and you think about lives that you may have inspired or influenced in some way so that they could accomplish things that were there on their heart, then I think that your heart is full, your soul is full, and your legacy has more value to it. And it's not because any of those people may even remember your name, but you know in your heart you try to make a difference for the right reasons. But servant leadership is also about understanding the moments when you have to be very honest and direct when someone has fallen short of their potential or failed in some way, to inspire them to be better. Not necessarily, you know, you don't want to break them down. You let them know that you're disappointed for whatever circumstance. At the same time, you want them to overcome. You want them to find a path to succeed in some way, to be, you know, for the benefit of the community, benefit of the organization, whatever it may be. And I think servant leadership is that attitude of, I'm going to be strong and direct with you to help you be better and accomplish your potential, but I'm also going to be compassionate and caring to make sure that you understand I'm here as a support system for you.
Now, you have, obviously, you are, let's say, in charge of a very large organization. I'm sure, you know, individuals have different opinions, different thoughts, different experiences. How are you able to transfer your thoughts, your way of thinking about, for example, servant leadership to others? Because it's one thing, perhaps, to say, that's who I am, and this is how I basically act, this is how I go through life. But how to transfer that to other people?
Sure. Yeah. And Maricopa County Sheriff's Office has 3,500 employees. And we reach, as you said, a population of nearly 5,009,000 square miles. And I think in every context, in some way, what I say and what I do will have an effect, you know, for the better or for worse. So first and foremost, actions, as everyone says, actions speak louder than words. So I do, through things such as video messaging or written, you know, communications, through monthly publications in the organization and different mediums and formats, I try to communicate timely issues of concern or messages that I want to share with the organization. Yet, if I don't act in a manner that's consistent with what I'm saying, then it's devalued. You know, you become hypocritical or you're not inspiring people. So I am a believer that you lead by example, and leaders are in every space and place in every capacity. You don't need a title to be a leader. You could be a line level person in a space where you're just, because you're working so hard and you're so dedicated to your trade, that you inspire others and lead them to be better. So I just think there has to be that balance of share the things that have value, that are important to share when they need to be shared. Shut your mouth when it's time to let things settle and people take care of their own business. But in your actions every day, be cognizant, be very conscientious that people learn more from what they see of you than what they hear from you.
And perhaps in the same vein, take responsibility for any mistakes that we all make. Right?
You are spot on. If you don't have the courage to stand like this in front of the camera and say, hey, this is on me, what occurred should not have, we own it, I own it, I'm going to make it better, here's how I'm going to make it better so that it doesn't repeat itself. If you don't have the courage to stand in front and take the hits, then you shouldn't be the leader. And that's another thing that philosophically you hear all the time, you know, praise in public, you know, criticize in private. But when it comes to taking responsibility for the failures in an organization, the elevator goes to the top, and that's this office here. So I'm the one who has to genuinely own the responsibility so that the men and women know that I am leading by embracing the failures so that we can make them better, not just trying to celebrate the high moments for myself.
Yeah, it's a very important point. And I don't want to make it a silly point, but does that mean you're not interested in becoming a politician?
I've worked really hard to, and you know, people call me that, but I say I'm an elected official, not a politician. And I don't want to degrade those who are, you know, so-called politicians. This office had a pathway through, you know, a democratic process to be elected. But I, quite frankly, I hear people say things like, well, that particular politician elected, they crossed the aisle. And when I talk about humility being, you know, the expectation, not something in addition, I find it absurd to think that our political parties have become so divisive that they're unwilling to, more often than not, work together, and that crossing the aisle, why is there an aisle? At the end of the day, you know, we're all human beings. We're all tied to a particular nation and ethnicity and things of that nature. Those are incumbently distinct attributes that we have. Choosing a political party is not a defining attribute. It's just a philosophical, you know, alignment.
Yeah.
And you know, as an example, I'm a registered Democrat. I ran as a Democrat for this office, but I could tell you in certain ways that I'm very conservative, in other ways I'm very liberal. But I look at people, I look at circumstances, I look at challenges, and I make a decision solely predicated on what is in front of me, not some other belief system that I have to put in place first before I decide how I feel about someone.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, especially in this profession. I mean, who wants to, if a deputy pulls you over, should he be asking for your, you know, voter registration ID card? No, he should be asking for your driver's license, registration, and insurance. So a political affiliation has no place in influencing law enforcement decisions.
It feels, and that would be my subtle comment, that in the United States, and I'm sure in other countries as well, that it's almost like you're forced into taking a position. You just mentioned, you know, I may agree with this issue or on, you know, with these people, and on another issue with other people. And that's almost a concept that is, I don't want to say outdated, but you don't see that much. And you would think, you know, and it's sort of a Dutch expression, at the end of the day, we have to go through the same door. So you have to find a compromise and show basic respect to be able to work together and get the results that everybody has a benefit in.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't wait for tragedy to unify us. You know, as a human race, whenever we face a real threat or danger or a tragedy, suddenly we become galvanized. And then as soon as it passes, we go back into our silos. I remember visiting Washington, D.C. once, and I was in the Capitol on the floor, and they were going to vote for something. And I had no idea what they were voting for, what the bill was, but I could look up at the board and tell you exactly what the vote was going to be, predicated off of, you know, how many Democrats, how many Republicans, and where they stood. And that's a disservice. That's a disservice to people who have elected you if you're so strong to party line that you overlook the needs of the community that you serve. In many ways, this sounds terrible to say, but I can go into a prison yard and look at it and be the same way. You would see factions of people that stick together solely for survival. And this group won't go talk to that group because you'll get harmed if you do. So why would elected officials behave in that same capacity when deep in our hearts and our souls, we know better? And we know that there are circumstances where compromise is not only necessary, but it's beneficial.
I think it's a very important point. Thank you for that. Lesson number 7, it fits in there. Don't seek admiration, earn trust.
Yeah, if you're so concerned about being celebrated and figuring out ways to keep your job instead of doing your job, then you're probably not right for the job. Your focus can only be at one place at one time. And if it is outward looking in to see how you can make yourself special, you know, with all the current things like get more likes or get more attention in one space or another, then I just find it hard to believe that you truly are focused on figuring out how to solve problems that are in front of you. A lot of people, they want to make sure that their name is on a billboard or that they get some form of recognition to say they did a great job. Some of the most significant things that I've done in my career, just seeing someone smile or express gratitude because of closure on a circumstance has a far greater value than any recognition or award that I've ever received. So that's just my own personal philosophy and belief, but I don't need you to remember my name when this is all said and done. I just hope that your perspective on law enforcement has improved because you believe the good men and women are doing this job, which they are, versus, you know, my predecessor, he was known worldwide. If I'm not known outside of my own house, I'm okay with it.
Trust and integrity, they go together, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, integrity is that you get a commitment to value system of who you are, what you believe in, that you're going to be honest, you're going to be ethical. And then when it comes to trust, the only way you can really have trust is consistency, that people can depend on you and know what's expected. And it doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum with things. You know, I talk about that, whether you're a manager who micromanages or one who just gives complete freedom, your employees just need to understand what to expect of you when you come in every day so they can be successful. And that's where the trust comes in. Can I trust you're going to be pragmatic and you're going to make good decisions in the best interest of those that we serve within the mission? You know, can I trust that you'll put others' needs in front of your own? Can I trust that you're working for our benefit so that when it comes to healthcare and it comes to appropriate raises and a safe, healthy work environment, that you are committed to do that on behalf? If my employees trust, not that necessarily, I hate this term, I say, do you have our back? If you do something wrong, I'm probably not going to have your back from the context that you expect it. If you ask yourself, am I going to be consistent and fair in how we address violations or bad behaviors by our employees, then trust that I will be consistent. Same thing in how I prioritize the needs of the organization. But if you just want me to be your buddy and tell you how great everything is and to cover up bad things and celebrate you when you really haven't done anything worth celebrating, then I'm probably not your guy. So I'm pretty vanilla. I work on trust, I work on consistency, and I work on just fundamental improving the organization every day.
And that's how you built your legacy, which leads me to lesson number 8, right? Legacies are made in quiet places when no one is watching, and you sacrifice because it's who you are. And then you continue, legacies shouldn't be the pursuit of self-recognition or reward.
And I could speak on that, but I really feel like it does sum it up. You know, most defining moments are the ones that nobody sees, but when you know no one is watching, you still choose to do the right thing on behalf of others.
Do you have in your life, in your career, a role model, an individual that stands out and say, he or she, that's who I want to be, or that's who I am, perhaps? Does someone stand out?
No, I would tell you it's more of a tapestry of people, of things that I've seen where, you know, an individual stands up and just does what's right in the face of what is difficult. Those who dedicate, you know, like a Mother Teresa who dedicated her life just serving those with the greatest needs. You look at a Martin Luther King and you realize his words had so much passion and so much truth to them. And if not for the color of his skin, he would not have faced the difficulties that he had. You know, the list goes on and on. And there are even, you know, you look at people who you would say have done things badly or have done bad things. There's lessons to be learned there too on how to make sure that we're not repeating those types of behaviors. I would tell you, as I said, I'm a man of faith, so I do try to spend as much time as possible in the book, in the Bible, you know, and learn lessons there. I would tell you my wife is probably my muse. You know, she's my moral compass. She lets me know when I'm off track, and she makes sure that if I promise to do something, not just for our family, but more so for the community, that she'll hold my feet to the fire, say, get that done. You made a commitment. Now go out there and finish what you started. So I would tell you there are certain, you know, my Lord, my wife, and others close to me that have the greatest influence, but I can look through history and find certain lessons from a lot of different people and be inspired by it.
Very powerful. Thank you for sharing. Lesson number 9, we're almost at 10. What can I say? Lesson number 9, no matter how hard or difficult the day may be, it is much harder for those affected by the circumstances you've been empowered to overcome. To be perfectly honest, Sheriff Benzone, I wasn't quite clear on the meaning of that, but I look forward to your explanation.
Yeah, it is pretty long-winded. I apologize. So the first time I ran for office, and you've lived here, so you're familiar with the circumstances my office is involved in, and there was a practice of racial profiling and civil rights violations and things of that nature, people of color who were targeted. And I was running for office. I knew nothing about the process. I was just learning. And quite frankly, I wasn't excited about it. I was passionate about the idea of trying to make a difference, but the political process didn't inspire me. And it was middle of summer, so it was like 120 degrees out. And I was meeting with some folks who were going to go, and they were organizers. They were going to go hang little things on the doors and said, vote for Paul. And quite frankly, it was hot. I was cranky. I wasn't at my best self. And I was kind of feeling sorry for myself, like, why are you doing this? And this little lady who happened to be Latina, and she was probably in her 70s, comes up to me and she's got a stack full of these things in her hands. And she says, can I give you a hug? And I'm like, well, sure, you can give me a hug. And I give her a hug. And I really didn't understand when the moment. And she's kind of thanked me. She said, thank you for doing this. And, you know, it stays with me. Because for that lady, because of the color of her skin and because of her ethnicity, she was being targeted. She felt abused. She felt that in this nation, it was a free nation, that she was not a free person because of the practices of law enforcement as it stood. And she looked to me and she thought, even though I don't know this person, he's going to commit to making it better for me and others like me. So when I say that, what I mean is I'm feeling sorry when someone gets hot out and I gotta go, you know, talk to people about voting for me. This sweet little lady is living in a space where she's just afraid to walk out of her house. So what the heck do I have to complain about? And the same thing, like when we talk to a victim who's lost a loved one or been victimized, you know, when we see someone who, has mental health issues and mental illness, and it's frustrating for us to deal with them, but can you imagine being in their head and in their space in that moment on what they're dealing with? So I guess I could have summed it up by just saying, stop feeling sorry for yourself and be a difference maker. Push that rock uphill with a smile on your face because somebody else has it tougher than you.
And it's sometimes perhaps hard to realize until you observe someone that in this case gives you the gratitude and you say, hey, it's hot, I want to get out. Wow. That person then makes an impact, like you said, perhaps for life, right? I think many people have experiences that they keep with them. And those are true lessons that you and I experience, and they are very valuable, very valuable. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Lesson number 10, never forget others opened the door for you to walk through. Make sure you stay true to your values and convictions on both sides of the door. I like that a lot, Sheriff. Never forget others opened the door for you to walk through.
It's like that little lady I spoke about, you know, and every day I'm surrounded by people who created the opportunity for me to become sheriff. And I have to make sure that what they saw in me or believed in me before I became sheriff continues to be who I am as a person with all the new experiences that I may have. I think too many people, you know, they say power corrupts. I think power reflects, it magnifies, it defines. So I just want to make sure I leave the same man I entered. When it's all said and done and I'm just, you know, mowing the lawn or having a cup of coffee somewhere and I'm no longer wearing a badge and a gun, I don't want to be a guy who suddenly feels this void because I don't have this privilege. I know who I was before and I know why people believed in me to give me this opportunity, and I owe it to them to make sure that on both sides of it, that the title of sheriff is just a title. It's not, I'm not a lord, I'm not a king, I'm not, you know, royalty. I'm a simple guy who's got a unique job, and everybody in this organization has a difficult job to do. I'm not busier than anybody else. You know, if they're putting the work in, it doesn't matter whether you work at the library or you're a teacher or you're a doctor or whatever it may be. All of our days are filled with trying to meet the expectations of the demand of our lives. And if you think yours is more important than somebody else's, then go find out what it's like to, you know, do landscaping for a week. It's tough work.
I appreciate your humility. And at the same time, I would say to serve in your job, you need competence. It's not to say, well, I just showed up and I became the sheriff.
My greatest competence is surround myself with a lot of talented, intelligent people who I'd like to think, hopefully I empower them to just be honest and direct with me so that I have as much information as possible, try to make the right decisions, the best decision available. So yeah, I mean, intellectual intelligence, things of that nature, and just having a general grasp on common sense and process is all it takes for the foundation. And surround yourself with the brightest and most committed people that you can find, and collectively you'll get that boat rowing in the right direction and weather the storms.
And I like the part where you talk about stay true to those values that you have learned, right? And that perhaps allowed you to walk through that door. I think that's very important for many people to realize, like you said, it's not suddenly that they became different individuals. They got there because they got the help from certain individuals or situations, education perhaps, and it allowed them to take those opportunities.
Yeah, I reflect on the campaign again. An immediate person asked me, they said, you know, your opponent is going to get dirty. He's going to attack you. He's going to try to drag you in the mud. What are you going to do? And I said, I'm not going there. And they said to me, well, you know, what if you can't win if you don't fight on those terms? And I said, it's not worth winning then, because what I lose, I can't get back. So if I can't win being the person that I am, then I don't deserve to be in the position that I'm pursuing. So that's the only advice I would offer to young men and women. Don't sacrifice something that is true to who you are, because you will not get it back. You know, you can lose everything in life. The pandemic has shown that. You lost loved ones. People lose their business with a tough economy. All those things can be taken from you. The one thing they can't take from you, your true integrity and your character and what is unique about you, is the thing you should fight hardest to protect. Because all through life, all your trials and tribulations, that's what you fall back on to keep your feet underneath you and keep moving forward. You know, steal a tacky line from a silly movie. It's not how many times you get knocked down, it's just do you just keep getting back up. And in order to get back up, you have to know who you are and what you believe in. Otherwise, you'll get up and go in the wrong direction. So life's going to knock you down. Hold true to your values, and you will always get through those battles, and you'll always come out better because of it.
True wisdom. True wisdom. Thank you.
It's from Rocky movie, by the way, which is back there.
All right.
I find a way to point to it right there. It is.
Yeah, no, I'll look it up. But
Rocky Balboa. That's what the line is from that movie.
10 lessons, a lot of wisdom. I want to ask you one more question. Is there perhaps a lesson in life or in your career that you have unlearned, that you decided, I got to change?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you spoke about. Because of the challenges that we face in law enforcement, the dangers, the threats, and things of that nature, you can put up the self-defense mechanism. You become callous, you become cynical, and it works for you. It really does, because of what you deal with. It's one of people go home at the end of the night and find a way to disconnect from that. But what I had to learn was, you know, there for the grace of God go I in every circumstance. So don't let go of your humanity. Don't sacrifice that to try to become tougher in your mind because you think it's better for you. Always find, you know, the beauty in life and the purity, and understand that everybody's walk is a little bit different. So you have a job, you have a task, but don't let what you do define who you are. Try to find the beauty in it all.
It's very impressive what you're sharing here. And I mean that sincerely, because I know about your background, your reputation, so I'm not surprised. But what you're talking about in your role as sheriff of Maricopa County, to have that kind of personality, insight, care, sensitivity, empathy, integrity, those are skills that I think we can be very fortunate with. In your case, in charge of law enforcement, it's very, very humane. And I appreciate hearing that. And I want to thank you for sharing your wisdoms with our global audience. And I really appreciate it.
No, it's an honor to be on with you. And wherever this is shown, I hope I have a chance to visit there sometime. My wife and I do love to travel internationally, and we miss it greatly right now during the difficult times. But there's so much to learn from so many different cultures and places. And that's one of the most exciting passions that we have is traveling and getting to visit other cultures and learn from people and enjoy their food and everything that's exciting about each unique place. So thank you so much for giving the time on this podcast. And thank you to anybody who's watching. I hope that this time together gave you a perspective that inside law enforcement, there are good men and women, not just for myself, but others who really want to do right by, you know, right by our community. And I don't think that message is always properly portrayed, because you only see the worst of us, like we see the worst of society, and that's not fair. And we need to do a better job.
Powerful. Thank you. I'll make some closing comments. You have been listening to the international podcast, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, sponsored by PDF, the Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcasts, and parties. And best of all, it's all for free. For more information, please visit professionaldevelopmentforum.org. Our guest today is Sheriff Paul Panzone of Maricopa County, a highly successful leader in a very serious, as we discussed, law enforcement environment, sharing his 10 lessons it took him 50 years to learn. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That is podcast, the number 10, followed by lessonslearned.com. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, podcast by podcast, lesson by lesson. Thank you, and stay safe.